Bonjour, and welcome to Bon Appetit on Demand on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer broadcaster, Ellen Ward. Today I'll be reading selections from the July 2025 issue and also from the weekly email newsletter. I'll start with, got buttermilk? Buttermilk powder is the pantry powerhouse you didn't know you needed, by Jesse Sechik. When I say buttermilk, you probably think of the dairy aisle, but it's also available in a shelf-stable powdered form. For years, this blend claimed permanent residency in the depths of my pantry, stashed alongside the neglected flaxseed meal and almond flour. But it wasn't until recently that I tasted a spoonful of the stuff all by itself. To my surprise, buttermilk powder tastes nothing like its liquid counterpart. It's a worthy ingredient all on its own. At its core, buttermilk is simply, you guessed it, dehydrated buttermilk. Buttermilk itself originally referred to the byproduct of butter churning, but these days it means a milk product fermented with lactic acid bacteria. Removing the water content from the buttermilk yields shelf-stable solids that can be reconstituted in water in a 4-to-1 ratio. Unlike the liquid, which has a slightly sour flavor, the powder form is dominantly savory with a cheesy undertone. Because its flavor is concentrated, the powder acts as a shortcut to reaching creamy umami depths without much effort. The recipe that follows is an invitation for you to explore just how versatile this ingredient is. Coat chicken breasts in buttermilk powder just before grilling to mimic the bold flavors of an overnight marinade. The milk solids char beautifully, creating picture-perfect grill marks and a robust smokiness. Or use the powder to create a cheesy sauce for pasta, no cheese needed. When mingled with starchy pasta cooking liquid, buttermilk powder emulsifies into a clingy Alfredo-like sauce with just enough zip to make your companion say, "What's in this?" And the possibilities are endless. Sprinkle it on popcorn, add it to mashed potatoes, mix it with mayo to create buttermilk aioli. If you have a sudden craving for pancakes, it's good for that too. Jesse's tip. Look for buttermilk powder near the other dry dairy products, like non-fat dry milk powder in your grocery store. You'll likely see Saco Cultured Buttermilk Blend, a popular tub with a cheery mustached chef. Once opened, it has a shelf life of 6 months and is best kept in the refrigerator. Here is a recipe for buttermilk corn pasta, 4 servings. Using peak summer corn gives this pasta a sweetness that contrasts with the tangy, cheesy buttermilk sauce, but you can use frozen corn in a pinch if needed. You'll need 3 medium ears of corn, husked, kosher salt, 12 ounces orecchiette or other short pasta, 6 tablespoons unsalted butter, 8 garlic cloves, thinly sliced, 1 to 2 jalapenos, depending on heat level, thinly sliced, optional, 1 cup buttermilk powder, 1 bunch basil, tough stems removed, leaves separated, freshly ground pepper. Lay corn cups horizontally on a cutting board and cut off kernels. Transfer to a small bowl. You will have about 3 cups. Stand cobs upright and run sharp side of knife down sides to extract juices and pulp. Add to bowl with kernels and set aside. Place cobs in a large pot of salted boiling water. Add pasta. Cook until very al dente, about 1 minute less than package directions. Drain, reserving 2 cups pasta cooking liquid. Discard cobs. Set pasta aside. Melt butter in same pot over medium heat. Cook garlic, stirring occasionally until softened and fragrant, about 4 minutes. Add jalapenos if using and reserved corn. Cook, stirring occasionally until jalapenos soften slightly and corn is barely tender, about 4 minutes. Add buttermilk powder, reserve pasta, and 1 cup reserve pasta cooking liquid. Stir, adding more pasta cooking liquid a little at a time if needed until a creamy sauce forms. Stir in most of basil. Season with salt and pepper. Transfer pasta to a large shallow bowl and top with remaining basil. Next up, melted zucchini butter. Make the most of squash season with this good on anything spread. By Kendra Vakulin. Zucchini overabundance is a common predicament for home gardeners. Known for its high yield and hardy disposition, the vegetable will grow enormous blue ribbon at the county fair energy and plentiful specimens if left on the vine. Whether you're the one doing the watering or shopping for what's in season, you'll find no shortage. My favorite way to use it up is by making zucchini butter, a luscious, versatile spread that is just as delicious on sandwiches as it is tossed with pasta. Transforming grated summer squash into something so vibrant you'll be tempted to eat it with a spoon is a simple task. With the help of garlic, lemon, and a little fat, I like butter and olive oil, the vegetable cooks down in just 15 minutes, softening in texture, but retaining its fresh flavor. There's no need to squeeze out the zucchini. Salting and gently pressing will do the trick, as the cooking takes care of the excess moisture for you, and when it's done, it keeps well in the fridge, ready to turn into all sorts of meals. Buttery, vegetal, and bright, it might just become your new favorite way to use up your summer stash too. How it's made. Place 2.5 pounds zucchini, about 5 medium, scrubbed, grated on the large holes of a box grater, in a large mesh sieve set over a large bowl. Sprinkle 1 teaspoon diamond crystal or 1/2 teaspoon Morton kosher salt over and toss to combine. Let it sit 30 minutes. Press down on zucchini to expel some liquid. No need to get crazy and really squeeze here. You're not making zucchini bread. Discard liquid. Heat 3 tablespoons extra virgin olive oil in a medium Dutch oven or other heavy pot over medium high. Add zucchini and cook, stirring occasionally, until liquid cooks off and zucchini is starting to brown and stick to pot, 13 to 15 minutes. Add 1 finely grated garlic clove and 3 tablespoons fresh lemon juice. Season generously with salt and freshly ground pepper. Cook, stirring occasionally, until lemon juice is incorporated, 2 to 3 minutes. Add 3 tablespoons unsalted butter and cook, stirring often until butter is melted and combined, 2 to 3 minutes. Butter can be made 3 days ahead. Let cool, transfer to an airtight container, cover and chill. Makes about 3 cups. Ways to use it. Toss with pasta or layer into a summer lasagna. Spoon atop grilled chicken. Spread on a sandwich. It's great on a turkey club or BLT. Mix into rice or farro for a risotto-like texture. Serve with fried eggs or swirl into a frittata. And now we'll delve into the future of beer. Brewmaster Garrett Oliver and Chef Pierre Thiam are betting big on the tiny ancient African grain called fonio. When Brewmaster Garrett Oliver spotted Chef Pierre Thiam at a party in 2019, he made a beeline through the crowd. Oliver had just watched Thiam's TED Talk on fonio, an ancient West African grain. They were at a benefit for the Museum of Food and Drink honoring Questlove, and Oliver had to introduce himself. He'd been inspired by Thiam's telling of a resilient, nutritionally dense grain going back 5,000 years that is resistant to climate change, needs no fertilizers or inputs, and doesn't require irrigation, especially in an area considered difficult to cultivate. I wondered if Pierre had considered making beer with fonio, says Oliver, who just celebrated 30 years at Brooklyn Brewery. A native of Dakar, Senegal, Thiam learned about fonio while researching a cookbook in Kédougou in the southeast. Once popular throughout Africa, fonio is now primarily found in the Sahel, a semi-arid region that extends from the Atlantic Ocean to the Red Sea. It has an earthy flavor and can be eaten as a cereal, formed into noodles, incorporated into baking, or enjoyed like couscous. For Oliver, fonio bridged diasporic heritage with beer culture. Fonio connects my background as an African-American brewer, he says. I would like to show many communities how they aren't just connected to this product, but that their ancestors are the originators of it. For Tiam, Fonio was delicious food from a naturally resourced region that can not only restore the soil, but it can bring economic opportunity to the community, he says. The goal was not to make a single product, but to inspire brewers around the world to use it regularly, just as they do barley and hops. Oliver brought a batch of Fonio beer to the Great American Beer Festival in 2019, where they unleashed a following. People kept saying that they had to taste this beer made with the African grain, Oliver says. Their collaboration, Brewing for Impact, introduced Fonio to major breweries who experimented with its diverse expressions. A 100% Fonio beer from Carlsberg in Denmark, a Fonio stout from Guinness Worldwide, an IPA from Brewgooder in Scotland, and a West Coast-inspired IPA from Jing'e in China that highlighted Fonio's tropical, lychee-like expression. 6 years after that chance meeting, Fonio is now available to brewers in North America from the largest brewery supply house in the industry, RAR BSG. An investment of this scope has immediate impact on Tiam's network of farmers in Mali and Togo, many of them women, and facilitates large-scale production at the Senegal mill of Tiam's packaged food brand, Yolele. Oliver and Tiam aren't declaring themselves the first to make Fonio beer. This is an ancient tradition. But modern breweries, using methods that Oliver has pioneered with Tiam's processing model, is groundbreaking, creating innumerable possibilities for beer drinkers on the horizon. What's the driving force of this project for you? Pierre Tiam. We're bringing it back to traditions, the farmer's knowledge, the soil. Fonio is planted in rotation with Bambara groundnuts and indigo fields around them. This is the way agriculture must go, or there's no future. Garrett Oliver. It's urgent. People don't realize how grains are grown, that you've got to throw nitrate fertilizer on the soil, which is made from oil. It's not going to work anymore. The good thing about this project is you don't have to give up anything. You'll just have a grain that's easy to work with in the brew house and a food to eat. Pierre, you told me years ago that Fonio was not being consumed as regularly in the Sahel because of the deep colonial history. Has that narrative shifted? PT, yes, it's changing for sure. The colonial system has disrupted a lot, including our perception of ourselves and our food. When the French came to Senegal, they wanted our farmers to focus on growing peanuts because peanut oil was valued and it became a cash crop. The farmers used to grow Fonio, millet, and sorghum, but the French imported leftover broken rice from Indochina as the grain that Senegalese would eat so that the farmers would not grow other grains. Now, supermarkets in Dakar have Fonio on the shelves. That's why our distribution hub is based in Senegal, because we want to reach the West African market as well as being positioned to reach Europe and the United States. You look at Fonio as an investment in Africa rather than following colonial patterns of extraction and exploitation. How did you go about that process? PT. We didn't want to change the way the farmers had been growing Fonio because that was a contribution to the food system. They'd been doing it that way for thousands of years. The challenge was that they had no access to the global market. For me, it was about branding Fonio to tell the story of the grain and connect it directly to the culture where it's from. If the grain is not grown by these small farmers in West Africa, it shouldn't be called Fonio. Fonio is not just a commodity. It's a grain that belongs to these communities, and they should benefit from it and have a dignified living from its success. G.O. The first thing people ask is, where can we grow it in the United States? People are looking immediately to repeat that extractive process. Growing it in Africa is the point. It's systemic. This project benefits the local community of farmers, the end users, and the planet, particularly as it relates to Africa being a rich resource. G.O. Africa is not naturally poor. Historically, we set up a system to exclude African countries from global commerce. We're not asking for lower prices and looking for ways to increase our margins. We're asking, how can you build a future in this? Did you foresee Fonio being such a versatile ingredient? G.O. We've seen multiple breweries brew with Fonio now. Carlsberg made 100% Fonio beer. I was skeptical. When flavor is that concentrated, it doesn't usually taste good. But it was like a sparkling sake with notes of mezcal or ogogoro, a West African spirit usually distilled from palm tree juice. What's the prospective impact of breweries consistently using Fonio as a base for beer? G.O. If a major global brewery includes just 10% of Fonio in all its beers, you're changing the whole food system. You reverse climate change and desertification at the same time as you re-enrich the continent of Africa, at the same time as countries stem immigration that they say they don't want, at the same time that you make better beer, at the same time as companies meet climate goals they've claimed. PT. I was reading about a genetically modified corn that's supposed to face the challenges of climate change, but those solutions already exist with Fonio. Next, I'll read a piece from the May 16, 2025 email newsletter. Stop asking servers, what's your favorite dish? If you want to ace your order, there are better questions to ask, according to the pros, by Maggie Hennessy. Can I send a dish back just because I didn't like it? How do we split the check without causing a fight in the group chat? In Code of Conduct, our restaurant etiquette column, we explain the do's, don'ts, and IDKs of being a good diner. I don't ask servers to recommend their favorite dish very often. I've been burned too many times. There's the enthusiastic, albeit unhelpful, I love everything on our menu, and the sort of non-answer redirect, well, our most popular dish is. Plus, it's hard to shake the persistent rumors that servers are instructed to answer questions about the menu by pointing to the priciest dishes or ones the kitchen wants to offload. But what if the issue is the question we're asking? Servers are menu experts. They've tasted most, if not all, dishes and know which ones the kitchen is geeking out on. They can give us the scoop on portion sizes, flavor profiles, plate composition, and how to curate the best mix of items on the table. If we want the most out of their expert opinions, we have to offer up some details about what we like. Seema Prasad, proprietor of the Nashville Farm-to-Table Bistro Meal, M-I-E-L, trains servers to ask questions that will help send diners in the right direction. Does anything immediately stand out to you on the menu? Is there anything on the menu you've never had before that interests you? Or most ingenious of all, what did you have for lunch today? If you ate salmon for lunch, the server won't spend time selling you on meal's Norwegian number with shatteringly crisp skin. One shortcoming of the vague favorite dish question is that it tees up the potentially awkward moment of a diner rejecting the dish a server thoughtfully recommended. Tia Polite, a sommelier at the fine dining Indian restaurant Indienne in Chicago, is no stranger to this scene and says diners should frame their questions around their own preferences. If you have specific parameters in mind, you can guide our suggestions by saying something like, I usually enjoy X. What is the best dish or wine or cocktail for me to try? Polite says. Diners who are decision averse or want to let someone else guide their meal can respond in kind. What are you most excited about right now? This gives a server runway to wax poetic. Maggie Cook, the general manager and wine director at the modern seafood-focused restaurant Little Water in Philadelphia, says that diners should take a stab at choosing a few dishes on their own before calling on the server to endorse the selections, steer them elsewhere, or help fill in gaps. I can use the guise of my favorites as an opportunity to suggest a dish or two that I believe would complete their order, Cook says. For example, if the guest names two rich, indulgent dishes for their main course, I would recommend the bitter green salad, using the segue of it being one of my favorites, but bolstering the claim with how the acidity and crisp texture of the salad will enhance the two other plates. In other words, maybe the better question to ask is, what am I missing? Cook says that when servers respond to questions about the menu by recommending the restaurant's most popular dish, it can make them appear indifferent or having a lack of training and familiarity with the menu. But she also appreciates the impulse to tell customers about a restaurant's biggest crowd pleasers. As diners, it's validating when we choose something that is highly sought after, she adds. We're all just herd animals after all. Kyle Brown, general manager of Custom Shop, a new American restaurant in Charlotte, North Carolina, speaks to the desire to share in dishes other diners are loving by calling out the menu's can't-miss highlights. There are staples of the menu for people if they're first-time guests, and we feel strongly about them trying something in particular, Brown says. If customers like those early recommendations, it helps form a connection and trust factor with the server, which builds throughout the meal and hopefully on return visits. At the restaurants I frequent often enough for servers to feel more like friends than salespeople, I still like asking about their favorite dishes. If you have a place that knows you, it's that much more fun, Prasad says. They will guide you and get you to what you like a lot faster. Even when you ask to hear about their favorite dishes, a great server is already anticipating yours. From the April 29th, 2025 newsletter, comes 10 excellent coffee substitutes for people looking to ease those jitters. From frothy matcha lattes to roasted barley blends, you've got options, by Elena Chu. On a scale from 1 to 10, I'd say my level of coffee dependence is about a 5. I don't suffer from the full-on withdrawals that some folks experience, but I am addicted to the routine of drinking coffee. I love the meditative process of pulling a shot of espresso before sitting down at my desk in the morning and relish the comforting warmth of my daily cappuccino as I start the day's work. That said, while I don't see myself foregoing my morning cup of joe anytime soon, I found myself turning to other soothing beverage options when I need a midday pick-me-up. And I'm not alone. Lots of people, including many of my fellow Bon Appetit staffers, are swapping coffee for other drinks these days. Some do this to lower their caffeine intake, some are looking to avoid digestive upset, and some are just trying to shake up their routines. Whatever the case may be, the world of hot and not hot bevs is ever-changing, and there's truly something out there for everyone, no matter your caffeine and flavor preferences. Read on for all the coffee alternatives my colleagues and I are fixating on right now, from energy-boosting latte blends to decaf options you can sip before bedtime. Who knows? You might even find one that'll give your typical brew a run for its money. Some caffeine. Atlas Latte Super Blend. Okay, technically this isn't a coffee alternative because it does in fact contain coffee. But Atlas Coffee's Latte Super Blend is a delicious drink that mixes up almost instantly. It's got about half the caffeine of a cup of coffee and a nice coconut flavor, thanks to a bit of powdered coconut milk and, importantly, for a mushroom coffee, not too much fungi flavor, despite the inclusion of lion's mane, reishi, and cordyceps. I am not a professional dietitian or food scientist, so I won't claim with any certainty whether or not the purported benefits, like higher energy levels or better focus, that are the calling cards of the recent mushroom coffee phenomenon are real. I found myself awake, but not jittery, after drinking it for a couple of weeks. But if you're trying to get out of a coffee shop latte habit, this might give you a nice boost. Noah Kaufman, Senior Commerce Editor. Bloom Matcha Coconut Latte. I've always loved matcha, but lately I've been craving it even more than my typical coffee, which is saying something. While I'm no stranger to whisking up a plain, frothy cup of the stuff, lately I've been loving this blend from Bloom as an afternoon treat. The coconut milk powder adds a creaminess that plays nicely off the earthy matcha, and I like the addition of moringa leaf for a little vitamin and antioxidant boost. But my favorite thing about the Bloom blend, unlike a lot of other superfood latte blends on the market, this one doesn't include any sweeteners. As someone who has a particular aversion to monk fruit, which is so often used in products like this, that's a huge win for me. Elena Chu, commerce writer. Spice Walla Chai Pani Ginger Chai Blend. This drink is so many beautiful things at once. When brewed with both milk and water, the cardamom-rich spice blend spreads a soothing warmth through my entire soul. Ginger provides a bright but gentle spice on the finish. Sweetener is optional, but I found the right amount of sugar can make a mug of this chai dangerously irresistible, while also providing an absolutely ideal afternoon caffeine boost. Dan Siegel, Senior Director of Creative Development. For a beverage with a lot less caffeine, there's Gold Cacao Turmeric Latte. Gold's Cacao Turmeric Latte blend tastes like hot chocolate with the halo of some added health benefits. It also packs a warm, spiced punch thanks to a generous amount of ginger, cinnamon, cardamom, and black pepper. I love how there's already a coconut milk powder base, so it's creamy even when mixed with just hot water. But it's also great added to milk, coffee, or a smoothie. Kate Kasson, Editorial Operations Manager. And now for caffeine-free options. Clever Sleep Time Latte, that's C-L-E-V-R. Clever has a ton of adaptogen-laced drink products, and most of the ones I've tried I did not love. But the Sleep Time Latte is a different story. It's creamy, and though the flavor largely comes from a coconut milk powder, chicory, and carob, it tastes a bit like a wheat hot cocoa. In the world of superfood lattes, I think that is a serious compliment. But it's not just the taste, it's the function. Like I said about the mushroom coffee latte from Atlas, I can't speak to the scientific grounding of any of the health claims, but I can say that every time I had a Sleep Time latte, I got deeply restful sleep, even if I was feeling particularly stressed. Noah Kaufman. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Bon Appetit on Demand. Saying au revoir for now, this is your volunteer broadcaster, Eleanor Ward.